Live from WRAL News Headquarters in Raleigh, your number one source for local news. WRAL News, coverage you can count on.
Breaking news this noon, you're looking at a live picture of the U.S. Supreme Court, where this morning the justices ruled that race cannot be used as a factor in college admissions, gutting affirmative action. Reaction to that ruling is straight ahead.
We have two WRAL weather alert days in a row for tomorrow and Saturday. It's all because of a level one risk for severe storms. I'll explain when you'll see those.
And Raleigh police are searching for the man who fired at least one shot at an officer. We're live in Northeast Raleigh where this all played out.
Our chance for afternoon storms is back starting tomorrow. Good afternoon to you today. I'm Jeff Hogan.
And I'm Renee Chu. Thanks for joining us. Friday will be a WRAL weather alert day because we have a level one risk for severe storms. Elizabeth Gardner is in the WRAL Severe Weather Center with a look at why we'll be seeing this threat 2 days in a row, as well as tracking our air quality.
Yes, so we're going to start off with our air quality alert. They just updated this a little while ago. We're definitely going to be talking about those level one risks. But code orange now for almost the entire viewing area all morning long. We were watching, of course, that lower air quality that had moved in overnight. And the number right now is 117, so that puts us at orange. And they updated that they, is the Department of Air Quality, upgraded us to orange, which is 101. That's the very minimal of orange. But take a look at the map. It's pretty interesting. Interesting to see. This morning, we just had code orange from Raleigh northward and westward, and that's really expanded over the last few hours all the way down into the Sand Hills, back over toward Wilson and Rocky Mount. And we do have one little bit in the northeastern part of the viewing area that is code red right now, and that's going to be for parts of Northampton and Halifax County. So you can see it out there. It is definitely hazy. We're seeing that smoke from the Canadian wildfires. And boy, you look back to the north, there's a lot of code red and code purple as you travel up to the north. Let's talk more about our severe weather threat. It's a level one risk on Friday and again on Saturday, almost in exactly the same places. We could see damaging winds with these storms. Most likely, they'll be late in the afternoon and into the evening. But coming up, we'll walk through the timeline for Saturday and for Friday.
And breaking news out of the U.S. Supreme Court this morning, schools can no longer consider race as a factor in college admissions. The cases challenged admissions policies at UNC Chapel Hill and at Harvard. Today's ruling held, quite simply, that those programs violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. The ruling was 6-3, with three of the four women on the court, Justices Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson, in the minority. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the majority opinion, saying, quote, "The student must be treated based on his or her experiences as an individual, not on the basis of race." The dissenting opinion said the ruling rolls back decades of progress.
Reaction to this ruling is already pouring into the newsroom. UNC's chancellor says this is not the decision the school hoped for. And the UNC system president says they are closely reviewing today's decision. WRAL's Monica Casey joins us live from Chapel Hill now with more reaction to this ruling. Monica.
Well, just like the Supreme Court ruling, people are split about this major decision on affirmative action. I spoke with Andrew Brennan just a few moments ago. He's a UNC Chapel Hill graduate. He's been part of this case, testifying in a lower court about the positive impact of affirmative action. Brennan tells me he's disappointed about this decision, and he feels that the Supreme Court has taken colleges and society a step backward.
When I was a student at UNC, the school was 11% black. In a state like North Carolina, that was 22% black. Clearly, there is still work that needs to be done to improve diversity on campus.
Students for Fair Admissions had argued that the schools were improperly passing over some white and Asian students in favor of black and Hispanic students. I spoke with Kenny Hsu, who is part of the Color Us United group opposing affirmative action, before this ruling came down.
And I think it's a good thing, because where else in American life is race allowed to be a factor in your promotion, hiring, and admissions decisions? Nowhere.
Hsu has also released a statement today celebrating this ruling. Now, this decision says while colleges can't consider race in general in admissions, students cannot be penalized for writing about it in their admissions essays. Renee?
Monica Casey with reaction on this ruling from the Supreme Court live at UNC. Thank you.
And we're also tracking more reaction here in the WREL Live Center. Just within the last hour, Governor Cooper released a statement about this U.S. Supreme Court ruling. And the governor says, in part, this decision undermines decades of progress made across the country to reduce systemic discrimination and promote diversity on campuses, which is an important part of quality education. The governor went on to say campuses in North Carolina must now work even harder to ensure that all North Carolinians of all backgrounds are represented in higher education.
Ken, thanks. There is still quite a bit to learn from this opinion. The whole thing is 229 pages. It includes the majority opinion and writings from five more of the nine justices on the court. Our NC Capitol team is poring over the case and writing an analysis for you on WREL.com. We also have a link to the opinion if you want to read it for yourself, and an archive of our coverage of this case from the beginning so you can put this Supreme Court ruling into context.
Other important news we're following this noon. Raleigh police are looking for the man who shot at one of their officers. Police tell us it started as a chase. WRL's Destiny Patterson is in Northeast Raleigh where this all happened just within the last 30 minutes or so. Destiny, right? You talked to people who saw this play out right in front of their apartment.
That's right, Jeff. I talked to neighbors and they say that they saw that chase and they even heard gunshots ring out from this area. And police tell us that it was right here where that suspect shot at an officer. Now, from what we know so far, we do know that law enforcement, they were helping out with the State Highway Patrol. Neighbors tell us they saw several law enforcement officers driving past on New Hope Road chasing a vehicle. We're told the suspect ditched the car on Tapers Drive, which is just a few streets over. And then that suspect shot at that officer, and that officer was not hit.
But he was coming so fast. And then all you see, so I get back on the road, still coming down, and all you see, I'm like, oh, like they came out of bushes and stuff. It was like, vroom, vroom, vroom. It was like, woo, woo, woo. I'm like, I've never seen so many cops.
RPD was assisting State Highway Patrol. Like I mentioned, they spent much of the morning searching through this part of the area. I did also reach out to the State Highway Patrol as well as RPD to see if we could get more information on that suspect and figure out why they were engaging with him in the first place.
Yeah, pretty scary stuff. Destiny Patterson live in North Raleigh. Thank you, Destiny.
We're almost to the 4th of July weekend, and this year that means it's another day of travel troubles. You're taking a live look right now at RDU, where we have been all week tracking the many delays and cancellations. WRL's Kelsey Coffey has been there all morning speaking with frustrated travelers.
Things are starting to look a lot more like normal here at RDU, so I'll let you take a look at the TSA line right now. This is much different than what we saw at 6 o'clock this morning, but it's a different story at airports across the country. More than 1,000 flights nationwide have already been delayed or canceled today. Now, we're starting off the day here at RDU with 3 cancellations and 6 delays. That's 3 more delays than what we saw a few hours ago. This travel nightmare is the result of a lot of factors: weather, staffing shortages at both airlines and air traffic control centers. On top of that, we're seeing a record-breaking number of travelers. The Federal Aviation Administration is expecting that today will be the busiest travel day ahead of the 4th. They're estimating more than 52,000 flights. Here's travel expert David Fleming's number one tip if you're headed to the airport this week.
The key is to get ahead of it. So when you're noticing a problem, you're noticing a delay, look online and see what other flights there might be later on that you might be able to switch to.
I spoke with a woman whose flight was supposed to leave at 5 p.m. yesterday, and she's not going to be able to get out of here until tomorrow. She had 3 cancellations. That's what people are facing here. So don't be fooled by what you see behind me. Even though it's not that busy, be sure to get here early just in case if there's something wrong with your flight. Kelsey Coffey, WREL News at RDU.
As 3 Raleigh women spent hours at RDU waiting for their flight to New Orleans to no avail. Melanie Miller, her sister Melissa, and stylist Nakia Lawrence expected to take off for the annual Essence Festival in New Orleans. That was yesterday. And they described the emotional roller coaster after being repeatedly told their flight would take off and then would be delayed. Miller likens her experience to the Southwest Airlines debacle of December 2022. After four canceled flights, the trio searched for their bags and decided to hit the road.
All these people, it's at least in this one area alone, probably 50 people in front of me, trying to figure out how to regain their July 4th holiday from United Airlines. This is a customer service failure.
Now, United offered to refund them for the cost of their flight, but there's no word on whether they can recoup the cost of the hotel stay and the passes for the Essence Festival.
And we're following some breaking news here in the WRA Live Center. U.S. Attorney Michael Easley announcing more indictments out of Fayetteville in an ongoing violence and drugs crackdown. We live streamed this news conference this morning where Easley said 17 people were indicted by grand juries and federal charges over the last 2 months. All are in custody. As part of this crackdown, investigators made several seizures, including 16 guns, about 1,500 rounds of ammo, cash, two luxury SUVs. Now, in addition, convictions have been secured on all three North Carolina defendants in an international fentanyl trafficking ring. Easley says this crackdown is about safeguarding our community.
But the consequences are also borne by you and I, by our families, by our communities, by so many who bear the pain and the trauma of addiction and loss. Scarcely anyone among us doesn't know someone who has been touched by this crisis. That's why partnering with the community on these matters is so critical.
Well, Easley says as we get deeper into the summer months, authorities usually see an uptick in violent crime. But he says today's announcement should send a strong message that Fayetteville and other communities stand against trafficking, drugs and violent crime.
Ken, thanks. Next at noon, get your money right. Saturday is National Financial Freedom Day. We'll talk to an expert about what that may look like for you.
Also, a rover like this one will go to the moon next year. See how its stunt double down here on Earth is helping to prepare for that mission.
Plus, a monumental Supreme Court ruling that guts affirmative action in schools at 12:30. What the Chief Justice had to say about it.
Download the new WRAL streaming apps on Roku, Fire TV, Apple TV, and Android TV.
Here's a live look at downtown Raleigh, the hazy skyline. Yes, we're dealing with the smoke from the Canadian wildfires. Once again, our air quality at a code orange. You're watching WRL News, available on Hulu and the WRL app on your TV or streaming device. Saturday is National Financial Freedom Day. Becoming financially free involves paying off outstanding debt or reducing loan costs, building a safety net of savings, and creating passive income source. Pocketbook strategist Lakita Hawkins joins us now to discuss what this looks like for you. Lakita, I would imagine this answer varies from person to person, but how do you know what financial freedom looks like?
Yes, at first you want to define your goals. Basically, identify your short-term and long-term financial goals. You want to do what, you know, owning your own home or travel the world or start a new business or retire early. You want to clarify what you truly want to achieve financially. Next, you want to assess your values, basically reflecting on your values and what truly matters to you. Financial freedom is not solely about accumulating wealth, but aligning your finances with your values. Next, you want to create a financial plan, develop a comprehensive financial plan that outlines your income, expenses, savings, and investments, along with your debt management strategies. Lastly, you want to set clear milestones and actionable steps, and then track your progress. Regularly monitor and review your financial plan.
So it's not a sprint, it's a marathon to get to that financial freedom. What steps can we all take to be more financially secure?
Yes. The steps would include budgeting, creating an emergency fund, allowing debt management, and then savings and investments.
And then what do you do if you're currently in debt and you feel like money is an issue that you can't resolve?
You want to acknowledge your debt situation and confront it head on. You want to understand the total amount owed, their interest rates, and any minimum payments for each debt. You want to create a debt repayment plan, seek financial or professional advice, and then prioritize your financial habits.
It can be overwhelming, but it's important to take that first step and start the planning. Lakita Hawkins, thank you so much for your insights. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
An out-of-this-world event is happening today at the Museum of Natural Sciences, where you're looking live right now this noon. The Summer Blast-Off will feature mini rocket launches and an up-close look at high-powered rockets. There'll be a chance to look through solar telescopes. Much more fun out there. It's a free event. Wraps up at 1, so hurry. NASA is preparing to launch its first-ever robotic lunar rover. But first, a test drive. This is the latest prototype of the Viper lunar rover. The real rover will head to the moon next year on a SpaceX flight. NASA, once it reaches the moon in November of 2024, that vehicle will navigate some challenging terrain along the moon's south pole, collecting soil samples, looking for water. Viper is about the size of a golf cart, so you get a little scale, a little idea there. It weighs about 100 pounds. And the Viper name, Volatile Investigating Polar Exploration Rover. That's how it becomes the Viper. Pretty cool. Put it through all kinds of tests and it'll face in the real world.
Yeah, it looks very cool. Ford is teaming up with a global manufacturer to gift a new fire command vehicle to the National Park Service. The customized Bronco is headed to Bandelier National Monument in New Mexico at the height of wildfire season. The 2023 model comes with the Sasquatch package. It includes specialized equipment such as government communication system with satellite and antenna connections. The donation comes from Ford's Bronco Wildfund Endowment. A second customized Bronco will be sent to another national park in the future.
Pretty lucky. Neat vehicles.
Yeah, so happy exploring for the Bronco. A live look at downtown Raleigh. We still have those hazy skies with us. Meteorologist Elizabeth Gardner in the WRAL Severe Weather Center with where our numbers are in terms of the pollutants in the air.
Earlier this morning, around 7 or 8 o'clock, we had numbers at like 128 right around the Triangle area. And now it's down to 117. That still keeps us in code orange. And the forecast from the Department of Air Quality is for code orange through the afternoon. And you can see, boy, that's really spread across the viewing area. And it's not just here. We're seeing so much poor air quality. The code red there, the code purple, which is one level above the code red. And of course, that started to sink to the southward. Our wind is coming in the mid-levels of the atmosphere, right out of the northwest. So we anticipated that we would see this yesterday, but it just didn't get here as quickly. And so now we're looking at code orange for a good bit of our viewing area. There are only a few areas that aren't. Over here in Johnston County, Wayne County, Sampson County are not seeing code orange. They're code yellow right now. But down in the Sandhills, Fayetteville, Sanford, back over to the northeast, even parts of Halifax and Northampton County are under code red right now. A lot of the triad back to our west has been under code red for a good bit of the day today. You can see our flow in the mid-levels coming right out of the north and west, and it looks like that smoke is going to stay with us for the rest of the afternoon. That's 8 o'clock Thursday. This is a computer model look at where the smoke is. But watch what happens starting tomorrow. That starts to retreat back to the north. At the low levels, we'll begin to see our wind coming out of the south. It's going to start to push some of that smoke away from us gradually. It looks like we'll likely have a level or a code yellow for tomorrow. And code yellow means that it's safe for anybody to be outside. Again, the code orange just means that if you're in one of the sensitive categories, which would be the elderly, young children, or anyone with respiratory issues, you just want to limit your time outside. Talked about this too. Of course, Friday and Saturday, we have a level one risk for severe storms. We'll walk through Friday. It may be fairly early in the day that we have some scattered storms that develop. That's Futurecast look at lunchtime. I feel like that's probably a little bit early on the models, but most likely as we get through the afternoon and into the evening, we'll see a few scattered storms that pop up. And then, of course, we'll look ahead to Saturday, almost exactly the same area covered by that level one risk. We're going to see these storms developing to our north and west and sliding in and then eventually fizzling out. But our biggest threat would be damaging winds both days. You can see Saturday morning, all is quiet. We get into the afternoon, there's lunchtime. Into the afternoon and evening, a few scattered storm cells pop up across the area. We take a look at what's happening outside in Pinehurst right now, and you can definitely see the smoky haze in the atmosphere. Folks are getting around just fine. A code orange is still fine for healthy people to be outside. You kind of want to check yourself, make sure you're feeling okay out there, but it's not unhealthy for healthy adults to be out there. 83, our current temperature with a dew point of 64, so it actually feels okay. It feels much better than it's going to feel as we get into the end of the weekend, that's for sure. Our temperatures are mostly in the mid-80s right now. We climb into the low to mid-90s as we head through the afternoon. Of course, we're sitting at 64, which is tolerable, but tomorrow hits steamy, and then Saturday and Sunday we hit tropical. We have dangerous heat coming for the weekend, 98 Sunday, 97 Monday, with triple-digit heat indices, 105 puts us at a heat advisory. We'll likely see that Sunday, Monday, and maybe even Tuesday for the holiday. Right now, we have a weather alert day for Friday and Saturday. It's possible that we would see that on Sunday and Monday for the heat. So lots going on with weather right now.
Absolutely, yeah, Elizabeth. Thank you. Millions of products and foods were recalled in June. Today at 5:30, Five on Your Side is breaking down the biggest ones that could put your family at risk in the recall report.
But first, on your news at 4, rip currents in the Gulf have claimed the lives of 11 people already this year. We hear from experts on how to keep your family safe. DoorDash is changing how its drivers get paid. How the shift in the business model could give drivers more options.
Plus, a 13-year-old is cashing in on a cool idea. How he's setting an example for other young entrepreneurs. DoorDash is changing how their drivers get paid. Now delivery employees have the option to earn hourly rates plus tips for the time they spend on deliveries. DoorDash says the clock starts when they accept an order and ends when it's dropped off. Drivers can also earn pay based on the distance of an order. The world's first flying car is closer to becoming reality. Aleph Aeronautics announced its Model A flying car received approval from the FAA. The special certification limits where the car can fly within 110 miles. The company says the model is fully electric, capable of driving or, look at that, flying. The price, nearly $300K.
Wow. A 13-year-old boy is already an entrepreneur in Utah. Kakai Kalea created his version of the popsicle called Kai Pops. At the age of 9, he did this. Now his family business makes more than 1,000 of them per week. The young businessman credits commitment and patience as the height of their success.
By the end of the year, I would love to have a large-scale manufacturer. I feel like a lot of kids, like, they have this dream, and I feel like they can't accomplish it if they try.
The packaging for these Kai Pops include the phrase, share the aloha, meaning share the kindness, as well as the pops. Why not share them? Universities can no longer use race when considering admission, the controversial ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court that could have broader implications.
Plus, it's not even the 4th of July, but fireworks are flying at the nation's airports, from overbooked flights to the impact of poor air visibility due to wildfire smoke in Canada. How some Americans are trying to salvage their holiday plans. First, here's a look at the winning lottery numbers.
Shot in 4K ultra high definition. Your number one source for local news. WRAL News. Coverage you can count on.
We want to get back to our breaking news we first reported at the top of the hour. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled schools can no longer consider race as a factor in college admissions. Now, the case challenged admissions policies at UNC Chapel Hill and at Harvard.
Today's ruling held quite simply that those programs, quote, violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. The ruling was 6-3, with three of the four women on the court, Justices Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson, in the minority.
Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the majority opinion, saying the student must be treated based on his or her experiences as an individual, not on the basis of race. The dissenting opinion said the ruling rolls back decades of progress.
NBC's Bree Jackson explains why the justices say the schools can come up with a better way to create diversity.
The 6-3 decision upends the policy that many universities and schools have used for decades to decide who to admit into the schools. This is the largest reversal for the high court since it overturned Roe v. Wade last summer. The justices decided on two similar cases, one against Harvard University and the other against the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Both cases brought by the conservative-leaning Students for Fair Admission. The group argued that those schools' policies discriminated against white and Asian American students. The ruling means that any school using race as an admissions factor will have to stop immediately. Many will turn to other race-neutral ways to boost diversity in higher education, and it will be up to the schools to create and implement those policies. Nine states banned colleges from using race in admissions. Educators say the number of Black and Latino students enrolled in universities dropped and have never recovered. Lawyers for the student group agreed that diversity is necessary, but believe schools can come up with a better way to create it. In Washington, Bree Jackson, NBC News.
UNC Chapel Hill Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz issued a statement that reads in part, it's on your screen, "While not the outcome we hoped for, we will carefully review the Supreme Court's decision and take any steps necessary to comply with the law."
And here in the WRA Live Center, we continue to track more reaction from that U.S. Supreme Court ruling on affirmative action. You just heard Bree Jackson mention UNC Chapel Hill. You heard from Chancellor Guskowitz just a little while ago. And also now we're hearing from Harvard University that was mentioned in that case before the High Court. And the leadership writing in part, "We reaffirm the fundamental principle that deep and transformative teaching, learning, and research depend upon a community comprising of people of many backgrounds, perspectives, and lived experiences." We will continue to track reaction all throughout the afternoon. Look for new reporting on this story starting at 4 right here on WRAL.
Ken, thanks. New limits on what teachers can and can't talk about with their students are close to becoming law in North Carolina. The state Senate is expected to vote on the rules today. They would stop the use of classroom materials making reference to sexual orientation or gender identity in grades K through 4. Schools would also be required to inform the parents of any student who has to use another name or gender. Supporters say they're giving more power to parents. Opponents say the bill targets LGBTQ students and will only worsen teacher shortages. The bill is headed next to Governor Cooper, who is expected to veto it.
Nasty combination right now. Weather and airport staffing issues has snarled air traffic and created chaos for people who want to travel ahead of the 4th of July holiday weekend. We have it all covered for you, including a forecast in just a moment. Let's get with Tom Costello right now, Boston's Logan International Airport.
Well into the holiday rush now, and the nation's airports are filled with stranded passengers, many frustrated, aggravated, and sleep-deprived.
We just want to go home.
The TSA expects to screen more than 2.8 million travelers tomorrow, the most since Thanksgiving 2019. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says while they're adding 1,500 new air traffic controllers this year, it'll take time to balance a staffing shortage that's been an issue for years, pre-pandemic.
And we really need to keep the foot on the accelerator to get more controllers qualified and into the workforce.
And then there's the weather. Where storms are hitting is complicating matters even more, since New York's big three airports serve as hubs and transfer points for all of the major airlines.
It might be sunny where you are, but you don't know where that aircraft has been or is going, or where the crew might have been coming from or going to.
At some airports, this has been the scene. Passengers sleeping on cots, chairs, even the floor. The July 4th holiday limiting options for some.
We called hotels 20 miles out. Everything was booked.
Meanwhile, frightening moments in the air at Charlotte International Airport yesterday as passengers braced for landing on a Delta flight from Atlanta without its nose gear.
We have a nose wheel unsafe indication. We're going to have to go ahead and declare an emergency.
After realizing the front gear would not deploy, the pilot successfully landed on the back gear, then slowed the plane down. Passengers erupted in applause. The runway shut down as passengers evacuated down the emergency slides.
After we exited the plane, we looked back at the plane, we realized the whole front tire didn't even come out.
With no injuries, Delta called the incident a rare occurrence and said its crews train extensively to manage scenarios just like this one.
Now, also, if you're looking to travel to one of America's top road trip destinations, you're in the right place. North Carolina was ranked third in the country, best states for a summer road trip. The new list was compiled by Wallet Hub. It has North Carolina sitting behind Texas and New York. The categories include cost, safety, and overall activities. It also factored in gas prices, cost of camping, car thefts, and national park lands.
Tonight, we'll get an update on efforts to find lead at five Durham parks. City leaders will hold a public meeting at 7 p.m. at City Hall. We expect to hear from the contractors on what they've learned since a study showed high levels of lead in several parks. An effort to give charter schools more access to money set aside for public schools also could take a big step forward today. The North Carolina Senate is expected to vote on the bill. It would allow charter schools to dip into more district funding. Supporters of the bill say it would level the playing field for all students. Those against it say it would hurt traditional public schools because it would allow charter schools to double dip into money they already share.
Seems right now the British royals are going to need to rein in their spending, the big events that drove them over budget.
And how much would you pay for a home that's 200 square feet? It's astonishing asking price that's making it the talk of social media.
An Indiana state trooper was killed while trying to stop a car during a chase. Investigators say the pursuit took place near the Indianapolis airport. Law enforcement suspected the car was stolen. A trooper was trying to put down stop sticks when he struck the vehicle. It crashed, and shortly after hitting the trooper, no one in the vehicle else was seriously hurt. Well, at least one person is in police custody following a hostage situation at a Gold's Gym near Seattle. Police say a dispute led to a man pulling out a gun and holding several people hostage. SWAT and at least a dozen patrol cars responded to the scene. A hostage negotiation team was able to get the suspect to turn over the gun and surrender. Police do not know what led to the dispute, and no one was physically hurt.
Madonna fans will have to wait for her new tour after the entertainer was rushed to the hospital because of a severe bacterial infection. The 64-year-old singer was set to kick off her seven-month tour in Vancouver on July 15th, but they'll have to wait. That tour was going to be a celebration of her 40 years in the music industry. No word on what caused Madonna's infection. The annual financial statement from the UK royal household reveals that they spent more than they earned. The royal household spent $136 million compared to the sovereign grant of $109 million and $12 million in additional income. The UK population is about 67 million people, which breaks down the sovereign grant to $1.63 per person. Now, the high costs this year were attributed to Queen Elizabeth II's funeral, King Charles III. Third's coronation in May, as well as an ongoing refurbishment project at Buckingham Palace.
I'll give you a live look right now. This is the Supreme Court, where this morning the justices banned the use of race in university admissions. And we are waiting for President Biden at the White House to make remarks on that. And when he does, we'll take you to it. We'll carry it live right here on WRL and WRL.com. A tiny home in Duluth, Minnesota recently hit the market. It is making big waves on social media for its huge price tag. It's only 205 square feet, okay? A tiny home. It's priced at $195,000. Let that sink in a little bit. About a mile down the road, a four-bedroom, one-bath home with roughly 2,000 square feet. More space than that, right? It's at $199,000. So why the huge price gap?
Building materials were high, labor prices were high, and there was a lot of obstacles that the builders and the owners of the home had to overcome throughout that whole process.
Well, on average, every house sold in the area in 2023 has hovered around $340,000. Prices continue to climb because of a housing crisis there in Duluth.
A White House replica is up for sale in the San Francisco Bay Area. It has its very own Oval Office, East Room, and Rose Garden. This Western White House could be yours for $39 million, or you could settle for a tour with Zach Fuentes, who has the history of the building.
The office is part of a four-level, 25,000-square-foot home on 3 acres of land.
It is a replica of the White House in Washington, D.C.
It was designed by famed architect Julia Morgan, known for doing the Hearst Castle in San Simeon.
Real estate agent Alex Buljan took me on a tour of the home.
And then this room over here, this is the living room, which is modeled after the East Room in the actual White House.
The house itself dates back to the 1800s. In the 1920s, the grandson of William Hearst, George Hearst, commissioned Julia Morgan to make it look like the White House.
The story is that he had aspirations to be a president, a presidential candidate one day. His idea was to gift it to the United States government to make it a Western White House, a residence on the western coast of the United States to complement the one on the East Coast. That never actually came to fruition.
Aside from what Buljan calls some freshening up, the home has stayed mostly the same all these years. Chandeliers can be found around almost every corner. Intricate details found in many of the fixtures. Each bedroom seems as though it's the master bedroom, and the master bedroom amounts to the size of many everyday homes. Then there's the backyard.
And obviously you can see rose gardens everywhere, similar to the actual White House.
Though the home is just minutes away from the heart of Hillsborough, it can't be seen from the road.
Even people that have lived in this area or lived in town, grew up here, whatever, don't even realize this house is here. We've heard that countless times.
With breathtaking views and a one-of-a-kind Julia Morgan design, one might ask why the current owner wants to sell.
His plan was to live here with his wife and his two kids. And then as he started doing some of the work here, came to the realization that a four-story house with almost 25,000 square feet is not super feasible for a family with two young kids.
So if the home fits your lifestyle and you have a little extra spare change,
$38.9 million.
It could be yours.
Just trying to imagine a family of four in that massive house. That was Zach Fuentes reporting. If $39 million sounds like a lot, well, the real White House is worth nearly $400 million. But of course, that's not for sale.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard the price tag of the real White House.
The pool in the Rose Gardens, though, that looks amazing.
Western version's a bargain.
For a bigger family.
By that count, yeah. Elizabeth Gardner in the WRO Severe Weather Center with what's happening right now with this air quality.
Yeah, what would anybody do with all that space? Right? This is crazy. Air quality has been very interesting for us today. We did eventually, overnight last night, have that poor air quality moving in. It was code orange early this morning, and the air quality continues to slowly get worse. We're at 121 right now, which puts us solidly at orange. The forecast for today, 101, which is orange, the low level of orange. And these forecasts all come from the Division or Department of Air Quality. We take a look at the map again because it's been very interesting to see. We're going to start on the wide view. All this code red and orange, the air quality in the northeastern portion all the way back to the Midwest of the United States is certainly bad because of the Canadian wildfires. Here's what we're seeing here. We have just a small pocket of yellow. Yellow we see pretty frequently during the summer. That's not an action thing when we see yellow. It just means that air quality is not as good as it could be. But look at the code orange from Fayetteville through the Sandhills, Durham and Raleigh. And then we have this red area that's begun to shift a little farther south. So that's going to be up for, say, Northampton County, Halifax County. Code orange means that if you're in the sensitive groups, and of course, that's going to mean the elderly, young children, or anyone with respiratory issues, you just want to limit your time outside. Everybody else is, you know, mostly okay today. You can see that haze on all the cameras, Durham, Goldsboro, Apex, Chapel Hill. Everybody's looking hazy right now. This is a look at we've been waiting for the president to speak about the admissions decision from the Supreme Court, and we'll toss to him.
Recognize a college's freedom to decide how to build diverse student bodies and to meet their responsibility of opening doors of opportunity for every single American. In case after case, including recently, just as a few years ago in 2016, the court has affirmed and reaffirmed this view, that colleges could use race not as a determinant factor for admission, but as one of the factors among many in deciding who to admit from a qualified pool of applicants. Today, the court once again walked away from decades of precedent as the dissent has made clear. The dissent states in today's decision, quote, rolls back decades of precedent and momentous progress, end of quote. I agree with that statement from the dissent. The court has effectively ended affirmative action in college admissions, and I strongly, strongly disagree with the court's decision. Because affirmative action is so misunderstood, I want to be clear, make sure everybody's clear about what the law has been and what it has not been until today. Many people wrongly believe that affirmative action, a allows unqualified students to be admitted ahead of qualified students. This is not how college admissions work. Rather, colleges set out standards for admission, and every student has to meet those standards. Then and only then, after first meeting the qualifications required by the school, do colleges look at other factors in addition to their grades, such as race. The way it works in practice is this. Colleges first establish a qualified pool of candidates based on meeting certain grade, test scores, and other criteria. Then and only then, it is from this pool of applicants, all of whom have already met the school standards, that the class is chosen after weighing a wide range of factors, among them being race. You know, I've always believed that one of the greatest strengths of America, and you're tired of hearing me say it, is our diversity. But I believe that. If you have any doubt about this, just look at the United States military. The finest fighting force in the history of the world. It's been a model of diversity. And it has not only made our nation better, stronger, but safer. I believe the same is true for our schools. I've always believed that the promise of America is big enough for everyone to succeed, and that every generation of Americans, we have benefited by opening the doors of opportunity just a little bit wider to include those who have been left behind. I believe our colleges are stronger when they are racially diverse. Our nation is stronger because we are tapping into the full range of talent in this nation. I also believe that while talent, creativity, and hard work are everywhere across this country, not equal opportunity. It is not everywhere across this country. We cannot let this decision be the last word. I want to emphasize, we cannot let this decision be the last word. While the court can render a decision, it cannot change what America stands for. America is an idea unique in the world, an idea of hope, an opportunity, of possibilities, of giving everyone a fair shot, of leaving no one behind. We've never fully lived up to it, but we've never walked away from it either. We will not walk away from it now. We should never allow the country to walk away from the dream upon which it was founded. That opportunity is for everyone, not just a few. We need a new path forward, a path consistent with the law that protects diversity and expands opportunity. So today I want to offer some guidance to our nation's colleges as they review their admission systems after today's decision. Guidance that is consistent with today's decision. They should not abandon their commitment to ensure student bodies of diverse backgrounds and experience that reflect all of America. What I propose for consideration is a new standard, where colleges take into account the adversity a student has overcome when selecting among qualified applicants. Let's be clear. Under this new standard, just as was true under the earlier standard, students first have to be qualified applicants. They need the GPA and test scores to meet the school's standards. Once that test is met, then adversity should be considered, including a student's lack of financial means, because we know too few students of low-income families, whether in big cities or rural communities, are getting an opportunity to go to college. When a poor kid, maybe the first in their family to go to college, gets the same grades and test scores as a wealthy kid whose whole family has gone to the most elite colleges in the country and whose path has been a lot easier, well, the kid who faced tougher challenges has demonstrated more grit, more determination, and that should be a factor that colleges should take into account in admissions, and many still do. It also means examining where the student grew up and went to high school. It means understanding the particular hardships that each individual student has faced in life, including racial discrimination that individuals have faced in their own lives. The court says, quote, nothing in this opinion should be construed as prohibiting universities from considering an application's discussion of how race has affected his or her life, but be it through discrimination or inspiration or otherwise, end of quote. Because the truth is, we all know it, discrimination still exists in America. Discrimination still exists in America. Discrimination still exists in America. Today's decision does not change that. It's a simple fact. If a student had to overcome adversity, on their path to education. The college should recognize and value that. Our nation's colleges and universities should be engines of expanding opportunity through upward mobility. But today, too often, that's not the case. The statistics, one statistic, students from the top 1% of family incomes in America are 77 times more likely to get into an elite college than one from the bottom 20% of family incomes. 77% greater opportunity. Today, for too many schools, the only people who benefit from the system are the wealthy and the well-connected. The odds have been stacked against working people for much too long. We need a higher education system that works for everyone, from Appalachia to Atlanta and to far beyond. We can and must do better, and we will. Today, I'm directing the Department of Education to analyze what practices help build a more inclusive and diverse student bodies and what practices hold that back. Practices like legacy admissions and other systems that expand privilege instead of opportunity. Colleges and universities should continue their commitment to support, retain, and graduate diverse students and classes. You know, and companies who are already realizing the value of diversity should not use this decision as an excuse to turn away from diversity either. We can't go backwards. You know, I know today's court decision is a severe disappointment to so many people, including me. But we cannot let the decision be a permanent setback for the country. We need to keep an open door of opportunities. We need to remember that diversity is our strength. We have to find a way forward. We need to remember that the promise of America is big enough for everyone to succeed. You know, that's the work of my administration, and I'm always going to fight for that. And I want to thank you all. And I know you've been told I have a helicopter out there waiting to go up to do an interview in New York. I'll be talking more about this live interview, but thank you very much, and we're going to have plenty of time to talk about this, but we're not going to let this break us. Thank you.
And you've been listening to President Biden at the White House as he makes his exit. How it affects the state of North Carolina, because UNC and Harvard were the center of this case that brought up the affirmative action issue right from the start. And UNC Chapel Hill, 8-10% African-American student population, when the state representative of about 22%. So unequal footing there, and the president agreeing with the dissented opinions.
Yeah, this ruling having big impacts on colleges and universities, on their admissions policies. We've heard from UNC Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz saying that the university disagrees with the Supreme Court's decision, but we'll have to follow these new rules for the future. We are tracking a reaction from UNC all afternoon, and we'll have live reports coming up at 4. We're going to get an update on our weather situation with meteorologist Elizabeth Gardner. A lot to talk about here as well.
Three important things. One, we're code orange ozone for most of the viewing area for the rest of the day today. We'll also have the potential for some severe storms on Saturday and Sunday. We have a weather alert day the potential for some wind damage. And then the third thing is the intense heat that we're expecting over the weekend, especially Sunday and Monday, upper 90s, but it will feel more like triple digits. Most likely we'll go under a heat advisory Sunday, Monday, and possibly Tuesday.
We're working all the local angles of the Supreme Court's ruling.
Yeah, certainly you can get breaking news updates on this issue and anything else going on in our area with the WRL News app. We'll see you later.